I want to say good morning, but it's actually afternoon, so I'll say good afternoon. Would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, please. Let's do maybe 4 minutes.
4 minutes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Sure.
And good afternoon. My name is Philip Leeser. I represent the appellant, Robert Ayers, the husband, in this case. I think my brief made the issue unnecessarily complex. I think there's actually an easier way to look at it that is the correct way to look at it. Having said that, the position we took in the brief was more generous to the wife than was necessary, but we're not going to try to backtrack from that. But I think that the correct analysis results actually in a simpler analysis. So,
Mr. Leeser, may I ask you at the outset, I didn't see any in your brief. Do you have any law that supports your conclusion that closing costs ought to be interpreted as a debt?
The law governing this case are the contracts themselves, and so the contractual provisions.
Do you have any case law?
No case law.
Whatsoever.
No case law.
And I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second here. I forgot to ask you if you wanted to reserve some time for a rebuttal.
No, you did.
Four minutes.
You
okay,
got it.
Thank you.
You got it. No
thank
problem.
You. Sorry. That's okay.
No problem. So, no, there's no case law that addresses it that I could find. I don't think that is critical in this case. Let me explain why. So,
The fact that you've been unable to find any law in any of the 50 states that would suggest that closing costs are in fact debts as opposed to an expense. What are we to gather from that?
Well,
the only merit is in its novelty?
No, let me correct that just a little bit. I did not look at all 50 states, so I didn't do a comprehensive search. I searched Virginia law, didn't find anything. There may be something out there, but here's why it's.
So, if you didn't look for anything else other than Virginia, how does your brief survive 5A20 scrutiny?
Well, there doesn't have to be any case law that expressly addresses closing costs and how those are characterized. I think the issue is a red herring because whether you characterize something as a cost or a fee or an expense, and there are subtleties there that I would argue, this is more in the nature of a fee than an expense, but it doesn't matter because until the cost, fee, or expense has been paid, it is a debt. By definition, it is something that is owed to another person. So if the product or service has been provided, in this case, for example, the real estate agents provided their service pursuant to their contract, they were entitled to the 6%, 3% each of the real estate commission fee.
Once the sale is consummated, because it's a contingency fee, is it not?
Sure, absolutely. So
much like if you have a personal injury case, your lawyer is paid on a contingency fee. You owe nothing unless or until
that's correct.
The case is resolved.
That's correct. So on the facts of this case then, the house I believe was sold on July 18th of 2016, if I'm correct. And so that debt, for whether you call it a fee, a commission fee, or an expense, as the wife has argued, or whether you can call it a cost, doesn't matter because as of the consummation of that transaction, it was a debt. It was owed by Mr. and Mrs. Ayers. So it doesn't matter what you call it. And the reason I would suggest the court not get mired in that is that there is ample language in the contracts that define debts that provides enough guidance here. We don't need case law that says, real estate commissions or closing costs are a fee or an expense or a cost or a debt. By definition, until they're paid, they are a debt.
The house was sold before the entry of the property settlement agreement. Is that correct?
Yes. The property settlement agreement was, I believe, in 2017, and this house was sold in 2016. That's correct.
And doesn't the property settlement agreement say on page 7 that the parties are not jointly obligated to pay any debts?
Yes, and that too is a red herring, because the reason the property settlement agreement says that, or they call it a marital settlement agreement here, is that as of that time, there was no debt. It had been paid from the proceeds because the real estate agents, they have probably some statutory lien or what have you. So the debt existed when the sale was consummated, But then there was a mechanism in place for the real estate agents and the county and the city and the state to get their payment of their fees, which was a debt owed by the husband and wife.
Well, the sale of a home is only consummated when it closes, correct?
Right.
Well, there is no debt when it closes.
Well,
expenses deducted from the purchase price.
Well, I think the court is being too hyper-technical, because until that money is paid, there is some lapse of time between the close of the transaction and the transmission of the funds to the respective parties. But again,
that sounds a lot more hyper-technical than what I just
said. No, it's not, because whether you characterize it as a fee, a cost, or an expense, it is money that is owed to a third party. It is a debt until it is paid. And it doesn't matter whether you call it a cost or an expense, because the parties' agreements determine how to treat this debt. And while the debt was paid as of the time of entry of the marital settlement agreement, the allocation, the determination of how to allocate that debt, how to allocate the credit or the liabilities between the two parties, that had been expressly reserved for the trial court by pursuant to the marital agreement. So now the trial court was faced then with the issue of how do we allocate this? And the answer is as follows. If the court looks at it as, let's say, three baskets, you have the husband's separate interest, you have the marital interest, and then you have the bank's interest. Now, at the start at the purchase of this property, the husband had put in $272,000, and so of the purchase price, that was, I think it was like 22%, so that was his portion of the equity. The marital portion was zero, because it was completely, you know, the mortgage had not been paid down. Now, as the marriage progressed, and once we get to the end of the marriage, the marital share has gone up by about $120,000, because that's how much of the debt had been paid down, and the bank share had gone down commensurately by $120,000. So the mortgage was used to secure this loan, which benefited the marital estate. What the husband contributed, $272,000, had nothing to do with the mortgage. I mean, if anything, his contribution reduced the necessity of having the mortgage. So attributing any portion of this mortgage or the closing costs to his contribution is an error. The way the court should look at it is all of these closing costs are a debt. Yes, they were paid almost contemporaneously with the closing. So the debt has been extinguished, but the credit for the debt, the allocation between the parties, that has yet to be determined. But if we go to the definitions, it is very clear it is not a separate debt. It is a marital or joint debt, because it was used to obtain this property. And as such, a joint or marital debt, as commanded by the premarital agreement, are divided 50-50 regardless of either party's equal contribution to that debt.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
Let's assume for the sake of discussion that the wife was not involved in the property at all.
Okay.
And let's assume that the property value at the end of time where the husband wanted to stay there, he sold the property.
Okay.
And let's assume that he sold it for $272,000, which is apparently what equity had in the property. What would his closing cost be?
If it was his property, so we're saying the wife is, they're not even married?
Correct.
Right. If it was his property,
right,
then he would pay the entire closing costs.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, and so didn't the trial court, in the context of this case, recognize that the $272,000 would be his obligation?
Well, it did, and the only reason I'm not backtracking from our calculation is because that's how we did it. But in reality, it's kind of a red herring here, because the correct way to look at this is the debt was incurred for the mortgage on the property. It was a joint debt. Joint debts are split 50-50.
Well, let me give you another context of this, defining it. The trial court, you do agree that the trial court, in the context of doing an equitable distribution case, can basically use any percentages it wants to divide a property, as long as it's reasonably justified by the record.
As long as it's not governed by a contract, right, as this
right.
was.
All right. So if that is indeed the case, the trial judge does have the authority. Isn't it sort of turning things inside out by saying that we don't like the calculation that the trial judge used, so therefore it had to be wrong?
No, because when there's no contract governing the issues, then the court can look purely to equitable principles and case law, etc.
Would the court be in a position to say that this is indeed an expense?
No, because that's a red herring. So what if it's an expense? It was owed to another party. I mean, I would personally define a cost as something that you pay for the receipt of some kind of merchandise or some tangible thing. A fee is what you pay for services. An expense is a recurring, monthly thing, like for your electricity. But you don't have to adopt those definitions. The point is this. Any one of those is a debt until it has been paid. And it must be looked at as a debt prior to its payment. It was a debt that was incurred during the marriage for this mortgage. The closing costs were attributable to this property. And therefore, it is a marital debt which the party's agreement, the law of the case, says must be divided 50-50.
So and before I go back to the horse that I was beating, because I don't think it's dead enough as it is,
sure.
Let's talk about the point you were just making. The circuit court needs to split this, what you've called a debt. Well, if it doesn't exist at the time of equitable distribution, what is there to divide in terms of that debt? The parties paid off a credit card debt during the course of their marriage. They might have done it while they were married, but there's certainly nothing left to distribute at the time of
sure.
equitable distribution.
But see, here's the difference. The parties reserved for the court to determine, based on their contracts, the remaining, the money that was left. How should that be allocated? In order to make that determination, it has to make the determination of who gets credit for what, and what is that based on? And the fact that the money was paid doesn't mean that the court just ignores that in its calculation of what each party gets.
Who wrote the addendum?
Who wrote it?
Yes. Husband or wife?
I'm assuming husband. I don't know for sure, but let's assume husband.
And if a trial judge is to interpret contracts based upon one consideration, that being who drafted the agreement,
mm-hmm.
if husband wanted closing costs to be allocated in the way that you suggest it should be allocated, why wasn't that in the addendum?
It certainly would have been great if it had been. We wouldn't have to be here. But the fact that it's not is not significant because the definition of debts is broad enough to encompass the fact situation that we have here.
Yeah, but then we'll jump out. A contract is always most closely construed against the draftsman.
But that's if there's some ambiguity. I don't believe there's any ambiguity. I think this cost, fee, expense distinction is a distinction without a difference.
To your point, if there's no ambiguity, maybe we wouldn't be here either.
Maybe. Maybe.
Mr. Leeser, you're into your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Thank
you very
much. A couple minutes left.
Thank
okay.
You. May it please the court, my name is Jenna Maresco, and I'm here today representing the appellee in this matter, Ms. Linda Ayers. We're asking today that this court affirm the decision of the Fairfax County Circuit Court, and we believe that there are two main reasons why the Fairfax County Circuit Court made the right decision in this matter. The first is that these parties' agreements, read in the totality, do not address the division of closing costs upon the sale of this marital residence. The second reason is because once we accept that fact, then there is only one reading of the parties' agreements as to the division of the net proceeds received from the sale of the marital residence. And circling back to my first point, specifically, prevailing contract law, which is what we're looking at here, says that in examining contracts, the court must look at the totality of the contracts, the language used therein by the parties themselves, and cannot add language or insert language into a party's contract.
Were you trial counsel?
I assisted on the case, but I did not appear at the trial, no.
Do you know who wrote the addendum?
I do not know who wrote the addendum, Your Honor. So then if we look at the parties' contracts, all three of the parties' contracts in totality, I think it's clear that they specifically do not address the division of closing costs upon the sale of the marital residence. Appellant's argument, of course, is that they are actually addressed by the contracts because they are debts, and the division of debts is addressed by the parties' premarital agreement. But I think that argument is flawed because it rests on the presumption that closing costs themselves are debts. And I think if we look at debts in layman's terms and pursuant to the parties' agreements, closing costs are not debts.
Hey, let me ask you, give you a hypothetical, if I may, and I'm going to give your adversary the same hypothetical or ask that he remember me asking it so he can give me his answer. Let's say Judge Alston wants to thin his large watch collection and decides to sell one of his many Rolexes. He takes it to the jewelry store, who takes it upon consignment, and it's a 50-50 agreement. The watch is sold for $10,000. The jewelry store's commission on that is $5,000. Is that $5,000 a debt?
I think that it may be a debt in those circumstances because if it's established ahead of time that the 5% is owed and we know exactly what the consignment is.
You don't know what the consignment is until it's sold.
Then I would say, Your Honor, that it's not a debt. It, you know, a characteristic of a debt is that there's some value received and you know how much is being paid for that value, but that payment is due at some later time. So under these circumstances where you sell the home, you may understand that there may be 6% paid in closing costs or fees, but you don't know what those will be until settlement, until the house is sold, until there's an agreed upon sale price. So those fees don't become a debt until they're established at settlement. And at that point, I don't think they're a debt at all. Let me correct myself.
You've got the net proceeds.
Yes, they are paid out of the net proceeds. They certainly aren't a debt. At the time of settlement, the parties aren't told, you owe these funds in 6 months. You owe them to be paid in installments over 6 months, which would be characteristic of a debt, that they receive those services or pay those expenses, but those expenses and services are then due at some later date. And under these circumstances, closing costs are due and owing at the time of settlement, and they are paid at the time of settlement. They are not characteristically debts. And I think it's more important to look at the parties' agreements themselves. And I am referring specifically to the parties' marital settlement agreement where they address joint debts, and that's page 31 of the joint appendix. They specifically say in that agreement, and it is notable to say at the outset that they did enter into that agreement in April of 2017, but had sold their house months prior in July of 2016. So at the time that they're entering into this agreement, they know what these closing costs are, they know how much they've paid for them, they've already been paid out of the proceeds from the home. And in that agreement, they specifically state that they are not jointly obligated to pay any debts. If they intended for closing costs to be debts, and I think when we're examining contracts, we're looking at the party's intention, if they intended them to be debts, then they would have explicitly stated that therein. They also had the option at the time of entering into that marital settlement agreement to reserve that issue for determination. If we look at the page previous to that, the parties do reserve they reserve the issue of the division of the sale proceeds. They say that they specifically disagree as to how they should be divided.
Because but when the proceeds are net of the closing costs and the other things that were line items on the HUD statement, is that right?
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. I think that they had the option in regards to debts then to say, we disagree as to whether closing costs are debts and reserve that issue for determination of the court. But they did not include that language in their contract, which leads us to believe that the intention of the parties is that closing costs are not debts. And I think then that if we accept the fact that closing costs are not debts, there is only one reading of this contract, and that's to say that closing costs are paid off the top, essentially, out of the proceeds from the home, and the parties then divide based on their respective marital and separate shares of the home, the net proceeds that remain. I don't believe there's any reason to bring the bank into this. The bank doesn't have an ownership interest in this home. There's a deed of trust. There's a note, but they wouldn't have an ownership interest until there was a default, and then they foreclosed and took an ownership interest. They have a security interest, but they certainly don't have any type of ownership interest. So there is no reason then to say that there should be, even if you were to say that closing costs are somehow a debt, there's no reason to divide them based on the bank share in any way. So unless the court has any further questions, we've simply asked today that this court affirm the trial court's decision in this case.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Lodge,
yes.
you've got my hypothetical,
yes,
where something is sold on a contingency. The commission on behalf of the jewelry store is simply contingent upon mm-hmm. the sale for whatever amount that sale may be. It happens to be $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they deduct their commission from the proceeds that would go to
sure.
Judge Austin. Would you call that a debt?
Well, let me address that question in the context of this real estate transaction.
Well, if you can just address
sure.
it in the context of
well,
context
he,
of
here's the answer is it is a debt. It is a debt until it's paid. And so let's
well,
say
paid from the proceeds. So
it doesn't matter.
The party never owes anything.
Let's suppose in the context of the real estate transaction, let's suppose the bank screwed up. Let's suppose instead of sending the commission checks to these agents, they sent them to the husband and wife, and they were like, oh, I guess, you know, we got some extra money, whatever. And then those agents said, wait a second, that money is ours. We're entitled to it. Do they not now have a debt?
Allegedly they do, but
right?
the bank's got an awful lot of exposure itself,
well,
so
sure.
that's not apples to apples.
Sure, but, well, I think it is, because the point is, until it's paid, it's a debt. There is a time frame between the end of the consummation of the transaction and the time that these people get paid. And that time, however short or long,
escrow.
Okay, it is still, the point is, a fee can be a debt. A cost can be a debt. An expense can be a debt.
Well, getting back to my original question for you, what case law from Virginia or any other court in the nation says that? Says the closing costs are debts. What law do you have to support that?
You don't need anything because...
I'm not asking you if you need it.
I don't have anything in Virginia that even addresses it.
Did you look for anything outside of the Commonwealth of Virginia as persuasive authority?
No, because I think the contracts themselves provide ample basis.
But the contracts
don't
provide the definition of what is and is not a debt.
Well, I think that you
unless
can look
you,
at...
Unless you all have agreed to something that I don't see in the four corners of that document.
I think you can rely on the lay definition of what a debt is.
Evidently, we can't, because you and I seem to be at a fundamental disagreement.
Perhaps, but...
Mr. Lisa, your time is up,
you.
But if there's anything you want to say to
thank
conclude...
You.
Okay, thank you. We'll
thank
come
you.
Down and greet counsel.